Okay, we will convene with May 1st for Wednesday, May 26th. We will be continuing the public hearing of Senate Bill 5506, the Department of Corrections budget. Before we allow our distinguished panel of witnesses, oh wait, those are the young children that come. Those are the distinguished panel of expert witnesses. Before we dive into this, is there any comments staff wants to make?
Just that today, if the committee gets through discussions on capital construction and agency responses to questions, there will be a wrap-up period of time, and if they have a vacancy report that gets here in time, they'll go over that, and we will be essentially done with public hearings. So if you have any questions or other things you wanted to get on the record, today's a good day to do that.
Great. Representative Mannix.
The one question I'll have that we'll want to talk about later, and I'll just leave it on the table, is staffing levels and whether or not we ought to have additional FTE to provide you with the flexibility needed to cut down on overtime and to allow people to take their vacation and sick leave as needed and provide you with the continuity of staff that you need for operations.
And Chair Wilson, the Representative Mannix, they do plan on addressing some movements they've done at several institutions and talk about the proposed way of staffing.
Thank you.
More than welcome. There are no further immediate questions. Proceed ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Cook, Director of the Department of Corrections. With me at the table, Joe McGee from DAS and Sue Acuff, Assistant Director for Business and Finance. Sue's going to actually start, I think, with the long-range plan. We're going to cover the pre-construction questions that came up yesterday, give you some information on that. And I'm going to cover a piece on some policy issues, questions, and responses from the DOC that we've been working on for some period of time. Then I think we're going to cover sort of hanging out their questions, the vacancy report, and then finally do sort of a budget wrap-up and all the reductions that we have taken since the beginning of this whole process and let you know what that looks like.
Mr. Chair and members, I am Sue Acuff. I think you have in front of you something that looks like this, a long-range plan. Just the highlights of that, we do this every 6 months, right after Department of Administrative Services issues their new population forecast. This update indicates the plan for larger numbers of minimum custody offenders is continuing, rather than the median custody, which was originally assumed. To accommodate that, this plan actually does a 400-bed minimum security facility at Madras. That builds rather than the initial 96-bed minimum attached to the median, which was in the original plan. There will still be a median facility built there, but we'll downsize that to 1,300 from the roughly 1,500 beds to keep within the original range of beds that were to be constructed. That's the main change. That minimum change to 400 beds was also done for the Junction City site about a year ago after that April forecast came out. Other specifics of the plan include, and this first one is major to us, that the final siting decision for the women's prison intake facility will be no later than July 1 of 1999. Construction then begins, and the minimum portion of those beds will be complete by October of 2001, and the medium and intake portions by April of 2002. The Two Rivers facility will be complete by February of 2000. That's the full medium portion in addition to the minimum, which is already functioning. Then, when the Women's Prison and Intake Center comes online, a few things happen for men. The Columbia River facility converts entirely to a men's facility. It gets away from the co-ed circumstance we have there. The Oregon's Women's Correctional Center will shift to minimum men, and the temporary unit for women at Eastern Oregon will also shift back to men. Those are really important to note because, again, it's the minimum is the need that we have in the system right now, not the median, so it allows that opportunity to in a very cost-effective way. Then we got expansion of the three current minimum facilities at the Powder River, Shutter Creek, and Crossroads Forest Camp. Those all come online by November of 2002. And the first 400-bed minimum security facility will be in Lakeview, complete by February of 2003. The second one, that's the one that we just talked about, the addition of the change in address, that will be complete by October of 2003, I guess I said that. And the medium portion will be complete by April 2005. The next one is Junction City's 400-bed. That's June of 2004. The one change for them is that's a delay of 9 months from what they previously saw in a plan. In doing this and moving the Madras one forward and doing that 400 build first, it allows us to use those minimum inmates for construction of the medium facility itself, so that's advantageous for us and should be cost-effective for the state. And finally, the timing for the White City construction will be determined by a future forecast. And you'll notice in this one I left off the numbers of beds for the medium, for Junction City and White City. Those will be, we'll take a look at those depending on the forecast at the time. It's far enough out right now that I suspect there'll be adjustments prior to that point in time. The attachments that you then have are basically just pictures of what happened. The next one has women first, and the darker line is the actual April forecast, and the lighter one shows you what happens when the women's beds come on. Attached to that then, and again, I'll have to restate that this all assumes that the decision on the siting is complete by July of 1999. Okay. The next one, this is basically how we do
this. Excuse me. Senator Hannon.
Sue, when you look at the darker graph and the lighter graph that shows them almost meeting either December 08, and my question is, how far back by the schedule would you bring on additional bed space in anticipation of that growth rate? In other words, December 03 or somewhere back there to allow construction time to bring those facilities online?
Essentially, Senator Hannon, we're at basically a 30-month construction cycle under the current system that we're using. It should be shorter than that for an additional unit to bring on there, but it would be somewhere in that neighborhood.
So, if I can assume, excuse me, as you get to that level where both lines come in contact with each other, what you're projecting in is back up 30 months,
okay.
And that's where a new facility would come online.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, for women, it would be in addition to that facility for bringing on the minimum section 108-bed unit, that would be just a new build at that same site.
Well, the reason I'm trying to put the graph together with your box here, you show Junction City to be determined, no amount of beds, White City to be determined, no amount of beds. And you don't define a year. But if you look at your line going out here in your graph, it shows as being December 08. Do we count back 30 months from that? And one of these two facilities or both facilities will be brought online or what?
Senator Hannon, if I can, what I showed you first was just women.
This is just women?
Just women. And
okay.
The facilities for both Junction City and White City are men. So when we get to this one, it'll be a little bit clearer.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Yeah, and Chair Westland and Senator Hannon, what she was telling you about women specifically is that there's still a capacity at the Women's Prison Intake Center when it approaches this line to add another 108-bed women's minimum custody unit to help them stay above the dark line.
In an existing facility?
They're actually at that same site. The build that they're proposing initially will still leave them space at the Women's Prison Intake Center for another 108-bed unit at some point in the future, and that would take considerably less than 30 months to construct.
Okay.
Okay, with that, I'm...
I need to ask you a loaded question. Is this Junction City site a qualified site for an intake center and women's prison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, it's not.
Is that because of size or selection?
Selection.
In other words, the governor has not chosen it for that.
The siting has been done for Danish. Junction City is cited specifically for a male institution.
I may proceed. Let me pose a hypothetical question. If I were looking for a site which geographically and socially and physically and for all other kinds of reasons might be usable for an intake center and a women's prison along the lines of the currently needed intake center and women's prison, and as they're looking for a community that desires such a site, would the Junction City site hypothetically meet those standards?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, it may meet some of the standards. It fails to meet the standards which relate to the jurisdiction from which offenders come standard.
In other words, the close to Portland standard?
I would refer to it, Representative Mannix, more as the close to where you do the crime standard and the transportation issue and some other things as well.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to say, we will fight the siding battle at a different
time. Albert, it just came up and I wanted to make sure I understood the context.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I can move you on to the men's picture. Essentially, what we tried to do is get as close to the population line before bringing on beds as we possibly could. That was one of the issues that was highlighted in the secretary of state audit. In this plan, we have the average 280 beds available in the system at the time that those additional beds come online. Between that capacity and the use of temporary beds, we should have sufficient management flexibility. Less than that is certainly not desirable, and I think the director will talk to you a little bit more about that when he has his policy discussion paper in front of you. Essentially, this is what outlines the plan that we have right now, and all the attached pages do is basically show you how we get there and what we have in the system by the time we bring those beds up. If there are questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Senator Hannon, directly to your question on the men.
Yes.
When we ran out of space here, and we're again in December of 08, there would need to be another men's facility brought online. The way the current forecast looks, that could be another minimum build first rather than a median. So what we've done is essentially wait and designate what that additional construction would be to see what the next forecasts are going to tell us. But if it holds true the way that it has in the last few, it could be another 400-bed minimum institution at the White City site would be one example.
The, Mr. Chairman, if I can,
sure.
The 1,300-bed medium security that you have listed, April 2005, and then it shows a bump up. Is that the Junction City one?
Sir, that's the Madras.
That's Madras. Where would Junction City come in to pop that light line up?
The Junction City and White City, neither one of them are designated for the medium institution yet.
That's this chart or table, Mr. Senator.
It says undetermined.
The reason for that is the current forecast just identifies the need for minimum at the current time. So we didn't put in a medium facility recognizing those beds are more costly, and we don't need to build them yet. So we have left the timing for the next medium institutions until the later forecasts dictate they're necessary.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I raise the issue is that money has been spent to acquire the land in White City. There's a budget request we looked at yesterday of 400 $150,000 for property management to do all these tests and surveys and everything. My concern is we're being asked to spend money now that might be held in abeyance for upwards of 10 years. And the Department of Corrections yesterday said that they would need part of the money to do property management. But out of all that money was $50,000 for property management. I'm not a real estate expert, but this is a 600 or 800 acre ranch. It was a cattle ranch. And for $50,000 for this by anyone is $25,000 a year. And doing that for the next 10 years doesn't impress me, because what we're doing is spending money to keep something that we perhaps were a little ahead of our time in purchasing. As most of you know, I have not objected to siting, locating prison in Southern Oregon. I have objected to the location that they did select, because I think it's going to create urban sprawl, because sewer and water, road improvements are going to have to be made out into this farm EFU area. But it bothers me that we're conceivably holding up the money for 9 years, 8, 9, 10 years. And there's a lot of projects that need to be decided now, and how much limited resources do we have to spend on those projects now. And as soon as Medford is in its place and be the recipient of one of these facilities, then fund it. I don't have any disagreement with that at all. But to tie up the limited resources we have for 10 years in the name of something that may or may not come based upon a forecast, and it says here, undetermined on the Junction City medium security, and to be determined on the White City facility. Is that good prudent use of limited resources to allocate them well? And only raise that issue, Mr. Cook is well aware of my concern about that. I'm not opposed to the prison. I'm not using this as leverage to get you to move the prison. I just think it's just a prudent thing. And I've indicated a willingness to work with you on the siding of a prison in Jackson County.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, as you know, I think this site has been purchased. So there is some obligation for, unless some action is going to take place, which resolves this in some other way in Medford, which I don't anticipate the case to be. The DOC has some responsibility as the now owner of that site to do need abatement, to do some other things down there. If we can, this question is going to be answered, I think, in part in the next presentation around the pre-construction process that you asked about yesterday. I think we can address some of the issues. We've tried to find a way to reduce the overall cost of doing pre-construction. But if we do, as we have in White City, purchase the site, I think there is some obligation for us to continue to be good neighbors to those people that live around the site as far as fire suppression and livestock management, whatever the case might be there. We can talk about that in more detail. But there are some expenses related to this. And frankly, we tried to be, I think, throughout the process of citing very upfront about what the demands were. Everybody knows, particularly the people who have been here some time in the legislature, that the original projection was significantly greater than it's turned out to be. And so the department embarked upon the citing by direction and cited what it thought was appropriate, did not cite an 8th site when it was considered to be unnecessary. But during the time that we made the presentation, it was clear that some of these might not be constructed upon for 6 or 7 years. And that could all change. Policy decisions in this legislative body could accelerate any of that, and we'd be back here in 6 months with a new proposal to you about building on White City in a significantly shorter period of time, particularly for possible minimum construction. So we're not, that's one of the reasons why we don't put the dates down on some of these now, because it is so hard to have a crystal ball.
And Mr. Chairman, and I don't disagree with you, Dave. My problem is tying up that if you and I were prudent, we wouldn't tie up our total income account into something that may or may not in fact be used in 8 or 10 years. That's the point I'm making. Being prudent about buying it, yes, it is prudent to probably invest in it when you have the resources and hang on for the long haul. But it's hard to justify to taxpayers why we can't reach agreement on building one facility, whether it's Wilsonville or Umatilla or anything else. At the same time, we're wasting dollars and interest and everything day by day. The longer we wait to make a decision, I'm just concerned about we hold this money up in essence for 8 years, 9 years. What is the debt management to pay for this for 9 years? The debt management is going to come out of general fund money to pay this COP cost. And it's going to be hard for me to tell a person in Medford, we got to cut your school budget because we don't have enough general funds because we're paying off bonded indebtedness on purchasing a parcel of land in Medford that may not have a prison on it for 10 years. That's where I'm coming from.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hannon, you're not going to get a lot of argument out of us. There were several strategies on this that could have been followed at the time. One of them would have been to site each facility as you needed it. I don't know that anybody wanted to go through that process, but I don't know what would have happened on the price of property and various locations had that been the case. I don't. In retrospect, there may have been some things that could have been done differently. The reality is that we came before the body. We gave them the proposal. It was accepted. We were directed to go do the 7 sites and purchase those, and that's what we did. And this body can certainly restrict our ability to expend dollars for survey work or for property management or whatever the case might be. We just think that there's some necessity to do some base level of work in preparation for those facilities simply because we are the owners of the site and we have some obligation to maintain it. What that level is, I think, is certainly can be debated, but the property is purchased.
Okay. And we'll get into that a little bit more a little bit later.
I think we are, Mr. Chair, ready to move to the pre-construction issues if you want to address those. I think we've adequately covered this, and if anybody has further questions about it, we can certainly meet with people individually on the process of forecast and on the planning. But as Sue said earlier, we do this every 6 months, and it's a very rapidly changing environment, except for the fact that the forecast has been relatively good for the last 3 and relatively steady.
Mr. Chair, no questions. I will move you right back into the pre-construction discussion. And Senator Hannon and you, Mr. Chair, were absolutely right yesterday in your concerns on what was being proposed. Those numbers should have been revised to reflect the long-range plan.
Excuse me. Sue, could you say that for the benefit of Representative Schrader again?
You are absolutely right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. He's doubting me, so I can. Well, I have to deal with him on morning subcommittee, so I know what doubting the chairman is like. Yeah. Excuse me, Sue, we're just trying to shore up my pre-chairmanship here.
Yesterday, we did discuss with you some staffing changes as a result of the change in the long-range plan. We're only bringing on 5 staff positions rather than the original request, but was in there for 18. The associated pre-construction monies should also have been adjusted. They had not been at that time. They are now. In addition, let's give you some ground rules here. The change in actually going to the minimum build, and 3 of them right now, allows us to do basically a prototype design for the minimum construction just as a little bit immediate. In doing that, it's going to save you some architects and engineering fees. It gives us some opportunity for consolidation there. So you'll see those efficiencies moving forward. In addition to that, because of the delay in the Junction City side and White City, there are also delays in what we'll have for some of the studies and that kind of work in those areas. The original and what we discussed yesterday on the construction in total was $10.9 million. Today we'll come back to you and our folks have identified now a need in total of roughly $6.1 million, giving you a reduction. I'll just give you the specific dollar amount of $4,864,817 as a reduction in that overall package. There are reductions at each particular site, and Senator Hannon, in the particular case where you're talking about Jackson County.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask what page you're working off of, Sue?
This is handwritten. This is mine.
Oh.
Our staff.
Is this under debt service or capital construction?
You go to K-5 if you want.
K-5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Trader, can you, and we will break it out to Lakeview, and the revised numbers are like this.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. For Lakeview, the new number is $1,303,500. Madras, $4,230,600. Junction City, $280,500. And Jackson County, $249,700. So the latter two will just contain property management issues as well as site survey work. The one particular boundary survey discussion that was a concern yesterday, basically those didn't change, and our folks are telling us that they based their estimates for those on the Day Roadside investigation that was done up there, as well as the initial work at Madras. They did not change that. It's based on just expenditures of what they were having to do at the time, so they carried them forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hanna.
That's the, and I forget what handout you gave us yesterday, but that's the one that showed the $50,000 for a boundary survey.
That's correct, sir.
So typically it's $50,000 boundary survey, whether you do it in Medford or Wilsonville or Umatilla.
It ranges, Senator, on our sheets from about $40,000 to about $60,000 for the various sites.
Are those contracts that are issued by RFP, or how are the services determined or negotiated?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hanna, as far as I know, those are all bid services.
Bid services? Okay, because there were some questions I had yesterday about the cost of mitigation of wetlands. I think you had in there for the Jackson County one. The cost of doing some other projects that were not necessarily property management. Mitigating the issue of wetlands, what does that have to do with property management? That's only anticipation that someday, some point, you're going to want to build something in a wetland.
Here, Senator Hanna, the answer that we were given when that question was asked directly, if you don't manage the property, manage the wetlands, as you're moving along before you do the building, the wetland itself grows. And you get to a point where ultimately you have to mitigate a greater area. So if you manage it as you're moving along in time, then you have less need to do that, and it's less costly at that point in time. So the initial work is the survey to see what actually is there, what we would need to do, and how to effectively manage it so it's not a growing issue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
I apologize for devoting this so much to Medford today, but I'm really, City of Medford contributed to the process that they said we would donate property to the prison. The prison or Department of Corrections went in and said, we got this wetlands mitigation, we can't deal with it. DEQ and LCDC is not going to allow us to put a boot print or whatever it was called into this area because of wetland habitation. Now they've found a parcel of land about 2 miles away that's in EFU and is the headwaters to the wetland that the City of Medford contributed. And now we're being asked to spend all this money to mitigate wetland when the City of Medford hired a private consultant to identify the wetland, mitigate the wetland, and develop credits for the wetland and the city property. The city offered to give the property free of charge. Just welcome to Medford. Here's the land. That's where part of my frustration is. We went out and spent $800,000 to acquire it. Now we want to spend X amount of dollars, $200,000+ a biennium to maintain it. I don't know, maybe we're more flush with money than I thought we were, but I understood we were kind of at our backs against the wall with excess revenues.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, it is not our intention to spend $200,000 per biennium simply for the management costs. There are some survey issues and other things that are once done, they're done. Senator Hannon, also I think that there is some debate among the experts relative to the wetlands issue. In the case of the current site, it's a particular type of wetlands that allows for us to contain and control the growth of that as opposed to what exists on the site that you're referring to, which is the vernal pool issue, that the experts disagree over whether or not there is in fact an appropriate or even successful mitigation effort for the vernal pools. And I think that's been kind of the ongoing issue, as you know from your conversations with several constituents, that the debate still rages over whether or not the vernal pools can be in fact mitigated. And that is, vernal pools are not an issue on the site that was chosen.
I'll let the former city councilman talk about that. Maybe I have my facts wrong, but...
Senator from Southern Oregon. My understanding is on the vernal pools that they can be mitigated. In fact, they have been mitigated in California, successfully with an EPA buyoff. And, you know, they've gone through this iteration many times. They did offer up a site. It's not costing the City of Medford any additional money to have that site sitting there, but there are the adequate facilities that are there. It's set up as an industrial park. They have the neighbors all on board to do that. Another site was chosen. It did cost the state a substantial amount of money. Then my understanding is that the scope of the project even changed. The site wasn't come back and re-looked at, and we have an opportunity to have a free site. So I share some of the similar concerns that Senator Hannon does about spending additional money for items that are there, including, you know, containing the wetland that may continue to grow at the headwaters of the site that the City of Medford offered up. So I'm not inclined to support something like this. I know that some things need to be gone back and looked at. In addition, I would offer up at this time too, though I probably should have, Mr. Chair, talked about it in the capital construction budget, but I have gone through it with Mr. Cook about the hot bunking issues that we've talked about before and would like to have that included as a budget note. I think I've sent memos to all the committee members about that. I think we've had some good conversations, and I certainly appreciate that. I think that's also an issue as we move forward in looking at sites and site construction and building model prisons and things like that we need to continue to look at to the cost saving. I believe the cost of measure in the long run. I don't, you know, I want prison management to be good, and I want the people who work there to be safe, but I also don't feel like we have to give people deluxe accommodations in light of public opinion and the public opinion that people should work while they're incarcerated. So I'll just throw it all out there at the same time.
Well, I don't give a rat's patootie about these vernal pools. I just want to know if you Medford boys are still so flush you're giving away more of this free land. Is that why you're growing so fast down there?
We've got a baseball park full of newbie kids.
I didn't want to exactly say that, Senator, but now you brought it up.
We let it borrow it for a while.
Yeah.
And figuring out which door to buy. Door number one, door number two, or door number three. You might have to make a deal for it.
Mr. Chair, I'm a good fiscal conservative in the city of Medford, and in the effort to responsibly site prisons, offer that piece of land to us, and working with the community, any local members.
Yeah, we are a pro-prison community that's willing to site it at the proper location in our community, not in somebody else's backyard.
Pro-prison, pro-baseball?
What could be better? Okay, Mr. Chair, I think what we're going to do now is move on to the policy issues, unless there are more questions about the previous presentation.
What's the size of that baseball stadium, Dave? How many people are that?
No idea. I have 5,200.
Good enough.
Good guess.
Must be close to that. So what, Class A?
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah, you're welcome. It's now managed the team for you.
Oh, I love managing baseball, sir. I enjoy the team. The only problem Kaiser has with theirs is it's way too new. It doesn't have the stars and all the stuff going for it that Eugene does. We're going to take a few minutes, if we can, and respond to some of the questions that were posed on key policy areas. I don't want to read from this document. You're going to receive it, but I just want to highlight a couple of areas. Start with key policy concerns, the type of correctional system wanted. A lot of this, as you can see from the reading, is driven by statute and constitution, the mission of the organization. But I think clearly the state has, for a number of years, successfully embarked not only on protecting the community and the construction that it does and the type of staffing and programming that the organization does, but since 1995, we have been seriously in the inmate work business as well, and that does in fact drive the way that the system runs, the way that we design the system, and ultimately the way we design the buildings, which is the second policy statement here, facility design characteristics with major cost impacts. I'm not going to read through this, but there are a number of issues that can be addressed around construction materials. The department in the last, I think probably serious in the last two or so years, has been looking for a lot of the options that exist out there, looking at private sector, looking at other states, trying to find lower cost alternatives to the types of things we've used in the past. Sometimes, though, it's our belief that investing in the type of construction that makes the most sense over the long term and the day-to-day operational cleanliness and security concerns that we want to address in the facilities outweigh trying to reduce the initial construction costs by going to less expensive or less durable materials. And so we have opted in some cases certainly to err on the side of building for durability and for management as opposed to building simply for cost. And I think other states would disagree with that. The private sector may disagree with that. But I think Oregon's got a pretty good history and reputation of using quality materials, current technology, and some design concepts that pay dividends in the long run as far as the management is concerned. I don't want to address any more. I guess I should address a couple of these issues. Again, relative to facility design, requirements for inmates to work is one of the drivers. This decentralized concept, we talked a little bit, I think maybe Nick spoke some more about it when I wasn't here, on security threat group management, things of that nature. The TRCI facility in Umatilla, one of the designing principles around that was the ability to keep inmates away from large yard situations, to have more control directly over certain types of offenders, to be able to to segregate to a degree those threat groups that are more and more prevalent in the department. Right now I did a presentation before a group the other day. Nick and I went up to Portland to meet with a bunch of the gang managers around the state from Portland Police Bureau, DOC, various other state agencies. We now have about 10% of our population people that can be identified as security threat group members, essentially for the lay definition, gang members. It's a growing problem as we have more and more ballot measure 11 type offenders come in. We're going to have more of that kind of offender incarcerated as sort of the ancillary benefit of incarcerating more and more violent and dangerous offenders is that you receive more of the people who make their living through gang-related activities. So the design of TRCI was to deal with those kinds of issues as well. Perimeter security issues we're continuing to work on. That's a changing dynamic. It is an area that's probably growing as rapidly as another security area for us. How you do perimeter security, how you protect against either intrusion or escape. And we've modified the last two institutions to have different fencing systems on them. And certainly we get to the next prototypical design and redesign that we'll be looking at an improvement in the security system.
Dave, let me back you up just a little bit. Back to the top of that page, page two, responses. Department of Correction is examining each of the categories listed. You talk about the various categories over on page one. When will that information be available?
Well, some of the information is available now. We have a document which is what we've called sort of a general catch-all, is the lessons learned, and we've learned that from the construction project at Snake River and at Two Rivers. Prototypical design cost analysis report, that's what this is. Out of this, we've gained some information that we're in part able to use at TRCI, but we'll be able to use more effectively as time goes on as we build more and more facilities. And it deals with the types of specific issues that are addressed in the upper paragraph and arrows on page two.
Well, maybe ask the question a little differently. Which, and I know this is an evolutionary process. It's you know, not an event. You don't know everything you know today that you're going to know 5 years from now, and you're going to know a little bit more tomorrow, type of thing. Yeah, are there any pieces to this puzzle in terms of, you know, the rub? I'm just throwing stuff out. The tile ceilings, rubberized floors, shooting ranges, you know, all the shorter corridors, longer corridors, all the hot button audit item type things. Are there any pieces to the puzzle, any information that you don't feel that you have as good a handle on as you'd like to? I suppose a politically correct answer is we don't have we don't know as much about everything as we'd like to know. I understand that. But is there anything that you need that we can help you with, or that you just genuinely don't have as much information about in terms of building these prisons as you'd like to have right now today?
I don't think there is a political, if there is, I don't know what the politically correct answer is, but Mr. Chair, what I do think we realize and have realized now for a couple of years is that we didn't realize what we didn't know, I think, in some cases. And we're relying on architects, construction management firms, and others to give expertise to us, and I think we are a much more examining organization than we were a couple years back as it related to construction. We jumped into this quickly. We were moving ahead because we had a need to fill, and that's beds. And I think that we have learned to learn from other states, from the private side, and really just ask a lot of questions about how can we do this differently. And I don't think it is just around, you know, rubberized flooring versus something else versus corridors, but what we want to try to continue to balance here is the construction cost with the operational costs, and include in that the long-term durability of some of these buildings, because I think that there are misperceptions about cost in the short run versus cost in the long run, both in terms of and in terms of operation. And those are areas that I think are the most important that we'll continue to pursue on the lessons learned.
Mr. Chair, may I help?
Sure,
may
go ahead.
What actually was behind this document was both the construction at Snake River and Two Rivers, and what they learned out of that, what could be done differently in future builds to actually come up with some cost savings and efficiencies. we are certainly carrying those forward in taking a look at what can be done for the Women's Prison Intake Center, and we'll do that also for the Madras facility. So everything that's certainly in here, and they've highlighted some things that we absolutely need to do, including building code changes, and they're taking a look at dormitory issues. If you can use the dormitory setting rather than hard cells, yes, we do have some savings. So we are looking at that very strongly, and Larry would get to this eventually, but on the Women's Prison Intake Center, the expenditure limitation currently authorized is about 170. 171 or 172 million right now on the governor's revised. We have decreased that in working with Larry, and even to come in at 170.5, which is currently where we are on that estimate, we will need to do some of these things, some of these efficiency moves, in order to come in with that expenditure limitation, and we will do that.
And those are the points, Mr. Chair, that are highlighted in that paragraph on 2. Those are specifically some of the ones that are important in the lessons learned.
Well, you answered one of my questions. I mean, I know for various reasons, we talked about this campus style configuration. You know, I was going to ask, you know, have you given up completely on dormitory style? Sounds like not.
No, not at all. In fact, we're probably going to try to do more dormitory style rather than less in the future. We actually believe at Two Rivers we've constructed the most secure institution we have in the state of Oregon right now. And that, you know, that to a degree gives us flexibility on future, quote, medium custody facilities that we didn't have before we built that facility.
Well, and then isn't it true also, and I'm not trying to, I'm not editorializing here for a particular position, but in a decentralized style, you have functioning these pods or spread out type approach that are individually secure as well as whole system secure. Can't you temporarily house women in some of the pods or one of the wings of the Umatilla site?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as we've said probably 1,000 times, to various committees, we will do exactly what we're told to do, and we will make that work. And yes, we could house women at Umatilla. There are significant risks to doing that, significant problems over time in doing that. Could we house them? Yes.
Yeah, the only thing I ask that is that just, you know, and I'll probably be asking the question again, just in terms of you have different populations and you're trying to keep them segmented and you have different, you know, types of requirements for different populations, and it just seems that women could fit into that matrix. I understand there's additional costs. I understand there's some additional difficulties.
Well, we would, let me give a caveat, I guess, to the answer to that question. I would answer that as a temporary solution to
temporary.
A problem. I would not want to construe that as a long-term solution, because I think it is exactly the wrong strategy if you expect the department and public safety to try to reduce criminal activity in communities. You're not going to do it by doing that.
And any inference in my question to a long-term solution?
I just want to clarify, because I wasn't sure if that was clear when I said it.
I'm glad you did. We've got a hand there, so I'll raise very short. A couple of quick, well, maybe not so quick questions, but one, I mean, all the discussion on facility design characteristics revolves a little bit around philosophy. And I guess the basic question I'd ask is it the department's view that a prisoner coming into the building should say, pretty nice place? Or is it your view they should come in and say, geez, I'm not sure this is such a great place? I mean, that gets, and is there an advantage for them to say one or the other? Because I'm not a corrections officer, or I don't have the background you all do.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I hope they come in and say, I can't get out of this place. And it's a place that is an example of cleanliness and safety for the staff and for the inmates. And it is a place that I want to keep clean and safe. Inmates in Oregon, in part, are compliant with the rules of the organization and the discipline of the organization because they get treated with some degree of respect and fairness. And a lot of that has to do with not keeping them in places which are not conducive to them believing that they have an opportunity to be successful when they leave.
Okay, well, I would agree with all that. I think those are good criteria myself. So then I guess what I would like to see, and I've asked if it's possible, because you say you're addressing some of these things, but to help me understand what's possible so as a policymaker I can give some guidance and you can tell me where the problem is, it'd be neat to see maybe three different examples. One would be regarding the corridors or hallways as to size and length. What's the trade-off with making them different sizes and lengths in terms of security or safety, in your view? You know, what risk does this pose? And that would, I think, clarify the issue for a layperson, at least like myself. The other issue would be, another simple one to address would be, do we put tile on the floor or do we keep them concrete floors? You know, or the ceiling or whatever, you know, it would seem that wouldn't go against any other criteria. What would the cost savings be? What's the problem with that? And that would help put it in a micro perspective. If you're talking millions of dollars here, it would make it a little easier for me to maybe just understand the context you're working in.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I think that the context we're working in is going the direction you're trying to give.
Yes.
And you have sitting before you, I think, a couple of converts and some in the audience as to things that can be done that we didn't believe through initial discussion with architects and others could be done. I think we now believe that sizing, length of corridor, some of those other things only make good sense. We don't see a lot of downside risk to doing that. And that's exactly the kind of stuff we want to explore, because we think there's a lot to be learned from that, and we've seen it not necessarily in action today, but we've seen it under construction, and we'll follow along for a while and watch, but we just don't see how it contributes significant risk.
Just last little thoughts. If I said you did the right thing.
I've got a leader for saying, whatever you do, don't call on me.
So just for, I appreciate that, and I'm not prejudging, and you learn as you go through this process. We haven't built a lot of prisons in the state, so I'm well aware of that, and so you do what you do, and you learn as you go, and I'm really pleased to hear you say Two Rivers is the best job yet, because that's the most recent job yet. That makes good sense. But again, it'd be helpful if in the course of our deliberations, there's a little, you know, here's what we've learned so far type of thing, and or at least some report back, and maybe that's a more comfortable way. If you're uncomfortable with the amount of the quality of the information you have today, I'm okay that, you know, you talk to somebody, you know, in the interim or some deal along those lines. Maybe that's the way to go, just to get at that issue.
We see all these as opportunities to, again, have the dialogue with the policymakers about this, and then lay out the continuing lessons learned, because this is the first of probably several of these events where we'll continue to refine the process and look at what other people are doing.
Okay.
Commissioner.
Part of this, I think, would be the law of unintended consequences, and that is, as you've gone along, things will come up that nobody could anticipate in the Oregon context. Our unique prison work requirement, our unique security scenario where we have the lowest incidence of drugs among inmates, the no tobacco policy. I mean, we can talk about other states as models for certain things, but then we also have our own uniqueness in terms of our model, and we have to learn from that. My perception in touring Snake River a couple of months ago was that even there, if you went back and revisited the construction of that facility after it was used for a while, you'd say, gee, we could have changed some things. But these are things that one never would have thought of until one had started using them, which I assume that you're going through this continuing dynamic of evaluating that and just trying to keep cross-sharing information as to each institutional model. And I guess the question would be, when we first were talking prison designs, and I was looking at stuff back in 89 or 91, we looked at these nice campus-style modular units, and it all sounded great with outdoor walkways. Then we found out about the additional staffing required to oversee these inmates, the concerns for security, even the weather impact as you tried to put in Measure 17. So is this model that you have really a sort of a continuing work in progress where you're just learning and processing information constantly as we learn new lessons?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, I think that was the statement that the chair made, is that it is an evolutionary process, and that's really a good, and Ben cited this a couple times, it's really a good reason not to talk about specifically prototypes, but to talk about an evolutionary prototype with a kind of a basic understanding, but how within that prototype, the first prototype and the fourth prototype probably won't look like they came out of the same family, potentially, because of the number of changes. Now, they might have significant similarities because of work, because of the security issues, because of staffing reduction issues that are there, things like that. But otherwise, they may look quite a bit different in terms of corridor width and construction materials and some of those issues that are cost savings, but not necessarily sacrifices.
Follow-up on that? Then, as we're looking at additional construction plans in the future, each one of them will probably still be a little different from the previous one because of the continued evolution. Maybe not as radically different as you might say comparing OSP and Snake River with 125 years worth of difference. But we should expect that each one is going to be a little different and that you'll learn each time. So you shouldn't be shocked at that, I take it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, I hope we're not shocked by it, and I hope there's an understanding that, as Representative Schrader said, this state has not built a lot of prisons. It built prisons based upon what it thought the requirements were in some cases and are happy with those results. If we could pick up pieces of Snake River and sort of reshuffle them and do them differently, we probably would, and the same is true at TRCI. And I think that the next one, particularly as Sue says, the women's prison, will be, the best one yet and most appropriate for both the type of inmate and the type of programming and work that's being done there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Please proceed.
Lease cost requirements, I don't know whether I should just blast through this or...
I'm just catching about three-fourths of the way down, and I've understood what you said all along about the 100-year models, and I truly believe those provide the least cost to the state and taxpayers of the state of Oregon. I mean, you add it all up, at the end of the day, those are the least cost facilities. But I notice in here you've got a word, third line down, considering this, the department used a long-term cost model in providing its facilities at low cost. Why aren't we saying least cost there? Or is that some Freudian deal, Dave? Are these things really just low cost? And I'm not saying that's bad. And we've made such a big deal out of lease cost for forever.
I don't, Mr. Chair, I don't know that anybody would say that the facilities Oregon has built are, in fact, lease cost for construction. And we did use the word low cost to try to, I think, indicate that we made decisions that we thought were appropriate for operation of these facilities in a lease cost model. Maybe Sue wants to jump in on this. I'm really, in fact, in many cases here reading her words.
Well, let me jump in and fully answer or get the question out there. Then I think the statute reads is that you will provide these facilities at the least cost. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm really using my own words. What this is intending to get to is they, and Dave's absolutely right, they may not be the, quote, least cost if you can build a facility, and they won't be because of the operational issues, and that's why we're getting a 15% reduction at the True Rivers Institution. When you consider your long-term operational costs are greater than what you will have right up front for construction, that's what we're trying to get that mix so that it balanced out, and in the long term we will be savings on the operational side. In direct answer to your question on the least cost issue, once you have your program established and we have essentially in these cases the guaranteed maximum price set, each element of that project is bid. It's sent out for bid and we are absolutely complying. As long as you have a subcontractor who can deliver and deliver that properly, it is a lease cost in that regard. So each one of those is bid out and done in that very fashion.
That's addressed in the final paragraph on that page.
Right, yeah.
And to once again reference what Representative Mannix said, the last paragraph on that section, the first paragraph on page 3 really speaks to the kind of lessons learned, continuing analysis. reinvested the cost, construction cost savings. As you heard, I think several times during the audit, this is a unique process that we've embarked upon. The CMGC model allows us to move quickly to do exactly what needs to be done to address issues. You are doing construction while you're doing design. You're making decisions as opportunities arise. We chose to reinvest in certain areas because we thought that was the best design long-term for the taxpayers and for our operational needs. And I think under CMGC, that is certainly a possibility to do that. And I think it's the kind of arrangement that encourages decision-making when you don't have a full set of drawings that really makes sense over time. Now, is CMGC the best process? That's debatable around time of delivery, some other issues that I think are essential. It's really a time of delivery more than anything else. You're going to pay a little bit more for it, and you're going to go into it without all of the answers, but it certainly taught us a few lessons as well about making decisions on these kinds of events.
Yeah, and I absolutely don't have a problem with this reinvestment as long as there's, you know, a process that follows. And this is what we think we're getting when we start out, and at the end of the process, lo and behold, there's X amount of resource left over, and then you kind of go in a prioritized list, pre-established prioritized add-back list, what you can add back to the benefit of the facility. I mean, I absolutely don't have a problem. We've obviously talked about this.
And as you know, many were cut to get to the construction process and bring the billing in on time, and then because of cost savings, they were added back again.
As long as you have a policy and a procedure that's rigorously adhered to, I don't have a problem with that. What was in that?
We also need to remember that we are now benefiting from hindsight when we didn't have hindsight available. Going back to 87, before I joined the legislature, and then running through my four terms and then being gone and coming back, we are just now getting to the point where we can say that our capacity and our projection and our construction is ahead of the curve, so we can be more cautious and plan better and learn faster. But we were playing catch-up and scrambling, and we seem to forget that sometimes. And yet, the legislature was slow to respond to the need, slow to respond to the demand, and then once it said, quick, 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 hurry, 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 do it, do it, do it, that is why you didn't take your time and come through with all of these fine, refined plans. Now we're getting to the point, though, where we don't need to be used to that process. We need to be shifting to, let's be smart in our planning, and let's also resolve our political squabbles about siting and get on with business.
Hold on, Representative Patrick. Patrick has been unusually and thankfully quiet.
I've been chastised so much by the chair today.
Senator Hannon motivated, put him on the spot. You did very well with that.
Thanks.
Okay, let's hear what you have this day.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about vernal pools.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get back to that.
That's my man. We're going to call him Vern. And prairie shrimp and vernal pools. I'm just interested in getting something that says that these are the things that we're trying to do in our prison construction, in our prototype, meaning, want X amount of square foot per inmate. We need, what are our requirements so that when we look at them, we can, we at least have something to judge by. And I guess, and I know that you hired some consultants, and in fact, you brought a consultant, one of your consultants here before the committee, but I guess it's also frustrating to be here to say, I guess you're always constantly reviewing, but that's why we go out and hire the best expert we can find, I guess, that's maybe done this before other areas of the country. I'm also concerned that have we given you enough resources to be able to go out and hire the best people that we can find in order to save in the long-term cost of prison construction or whatever innovative that's out there in the field? I mean, have those resources been provided, or have we restricted you so much on the consultants that you could hire that, we're having to reinvent the wheel, or are we doing something? I know you've worked in a lot of other constructions, but, I'm concerned also that we're paying to educate the consultants that we're hiring as well. I guess on the flip side of it, as we move forward in terms of our construction, what I talked to you about pot bunking or any of those kinds of issues, you know, what do we get? Are we getting what we pay for with all these consultants and other things as we look at the prison costs, and do you have the resources to do what you need as well to be the best and most innovative?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, that's a good question to provide you with the sort of underlying values that were established in terms of the design of the prototypes and the work we were doing. As it relates to the consultants, I think we had very, very good consultants. I think there may be a debate over, obviously, who the best consultants are out there. I think we had some of the best consultants. At the same time, the environment, and I don't remember who said it earlier, is different. The obligations are different, and so the consultants are trying to take their expertise and their history, come into a state by all accounts, arguably, maybe one of the more creative ones as it relates to the work programs and some other things we're doing, and not have had experience with that. And so our goal is to use the consultants where it's appropriate, but get our staff and the people that work for us as well informed as they can be, paying attention to what's going on nationally, looking at other models of development, and you know, be self-reliant to some degree as well. And I think we're more and more self-reliant in terms of what we think makes sense and what we can learn from, and not just accept at face value all that's said by consultants, because that's probably dangerous, and we've learned some good lessons around that, I think.
As a follow-up, how many other states have any kind of work program kind of similar to what we do? Are we unique in the country?
Nobody.
Other states?
Nobody has the obligation that we have in a constitutional setting. There are states that have significant work programs and very successful ones, and most of them, as Ben pointed out several days ago, rely upon the sort of institutional maintenance to employ a lot of inmates. Many have industries programs. Some have crews of one type or another, but nobody has the very simple, straightforward constitutional mandate that we have. It's unique in the country.
That is another follow-up. How many people have we hired from other states outside of Oregon to come in and help manage in a development issue or corrections issue? I mean, I'm interested to know from the are most of our hires from within or promotions from within, or I know you were a county sheriff before, but I'm just trying to see, are we looking outside the box? Are we bringing in the best minds and recruiting the best people we can to do this?
I think we are, and I think that we have hired, if you look at promotions, most of them have been internal, and that's not unusual for most mid-level managers. But of the last five superintendents hired, two of those were external candidates, one from Hawaii, one from Texas. Those people bring a different view of the world, particularly Bob Lampert, who's the Snake River superintendent, who comes as an attorney, MBA, you name it, wild animal trainer. He's been around the block. He's seen a lot of things happen, and those kinds of additions, I think Nick could convey this better than I probably will, but have really helped to bring about a broader thinking, I think, among superintendents about how to do business. And this is as evolutionary as the construction process is. Everybody's learning from everybody else, and there are, frankly, no real experts out there, regardless of what they might tell you. Everybody's learning this process.
Then I guess there's one more thought. But in terms of the construction portion of it and planning portion of it and all those, I mean, you have a few staff people, several staff people, working on that. How many of them are from outside? How many of them have we tried to hire in from states that have done big builds on prisons or brought in those kinds of people internally to help do this kind of stuff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I don't know that any of those people have been brought in from the outside, and that typically is done using consultant expertise.
Representative Chair, I guess following up with Representative another thing that Mr. Cook didn't bring out, which I know from previous discussions, is the institution of these work programs, such as the state of Texas had one since the turn of the century. And Frank Thompson, who's come in from Arkansas, came from a very institutionalized work program. And it's something that we are starting basically at ground zero and trying to really implement. And as you said, with the mandates have so many online so quickly, I'd love to see a private industry be able to bring in and work that type of population, let alone those particular individuals. up and online as quick as some of us have wanted to see.
Mr. Chair, Representative Podzanski, as I think Ben said yesterday or the day before, again, I can't recall, but we're going to maintain compliance at about 70% plus with inmate work while we add 1,600 inmates during the next biennium. So I think most private businesses of our size would be very pleased to grow by 1,600 jobs and be able to do it successfully, and I think we've done that.
Thought just occurs to me, but as you were talking about some of the, you know, the institutional histories of some of these states that have very successful, highly successful inmate work programs, and think, wait a minute, these are all in the southern tier. They all have year-round growing seasons.
That's right.
And that is probably a big component.
Well, it is. In 70, when I was going to undergrad, I had an opportunity to go through TEC a couple of different tours for classes, and at the time that we went through, which was probably about 75, it was costing the state about $8 per day cost for the inmates. But what they were doing, that way, growing their own produce, raising their own beef, having programs that at that point were limited to doing productions for almost exclusively other state agencies and not competing, per se, with outside agencies for other work. I think that's been developed now since there's 120,000 inmates down there. But, I mean, the reality is, and that's ongoing. I mean, I was very impressed. I guess the only thing I knew that they were doing outside contract work in the 70s was license plate, for one. But they did leather, they did on shoes, they did mattresses.
Eyeglasses, prosthetics, they do a whole array of things.
They pretty well got it. And, but I'm not sure where they're at today.
They're very successful, and it's in part the scale is huge. California, I think, is 140 or 45,000 inmates today. Texas is 120,000 or so, and they actually are. They do some things that, because of our size, we probably won't ever want to do. Because, you know, if we did eyeglasses, we might do a few pair a week or whatever. They might do 1,000 pair a month or whatever, just to save costs. So it's things like that may not make sense, but there are other opportunities that we're pursuing that maybe they can't do because of this ability to be involved with the private sector.
But Texas also, I know they sold to other agencies, so like the higher ed, where you have dormitories, either the desk or even I think some of the bedding and type stuff was also produced and sold from agency to agency.
OSU is one of our big customers now for dorm furniture.
Well, yeah, Dave, I want to jump gears just a little bit and talk about these co-location savings. I know as you cited many of these prisons, did many of the sightings, you anticipated that there would be, you know, more than one facility on them, and then it was kind of build them all around the state, and then we'll go back and build the second, you know, go-round. And these co-location savings, I think, obviously, as we've discussed, and I appreciate your perspective on it, the co-location savings, do you have any formal or any intention of formalizing that policy in any written documents with regard to accelerating these co-location savings? Is there anything, I see where you address it in here a little bit, you're essentially asking some, you know, bringing the issue up, but I don't see,
I think we could probably talk about and address it in some formal way beyond this if it was appropriate to do that. But I think if you again go back to the forecasting issues, the long range construction planning, the change in policy, co-location is a future time, but the where those co-location savings occur might change from forecast to forecast and plan to plan, because to get the type of co-location savings that we've talked most about, it requires the construction of two medium custody facilities at the same site. And given what you see with current forecast, the likelihood of that occurring anytime soon is not there, because we now have identified Madras as the next medium custody male facility, and nothing before the year 2009 in addition to that, simply because of the type of offenders that we're seeing coming in to the system.
Yeah, so you're saying it's pretty specific, and where you can do it, you're doing it.
where we're doing it, we can. It's also related to the demographics and other issues that play into that. Can we hire enough of the right kinds of people to put a second build at Madras, for example, because that'll be the first medium? Would we want to accelerate a Umatilla or a Madras next? Could we actually function in that area with 3,000 beds and 1,000 employees?
Yeah. I know several of us have 3 o'clock meetings. I believe I know the answer to the question, but who wrote the opening paragraph on this?
You did on your behalf.
You did that, Dan. Well, I good job. I appreciate the wisdom, you know, displayed by the chair, and I would direct staff to incorporate my wisdom into our budget notes. Now, this is exactly where we need to be. I wrote this at this meeting that you three held while I was on the floor yesterday. I am a talented guy.
Very, very capable, sir. May I inquire as to what you have planned for us tomorrow?
I wish we knew if we were even meeting. I think we are. I take that back. We have nothing planned for you tomorrow. We're giving you not only tomorrow off, we're giving you Friday off. We're gracious and generous because we're giving you Saturday and Sunday off.
And Monday.
I'm dying to hear about Monday.
And based on the speaker's whim, we may be giving you Monday off. And on that...
The whim was Monday off, so... Don't you want to have a house committee on Monday if the senators won't be there?
I think that's a great idea.
You get a lot more done.
Yeah. So whether we're here or not on Monday, we do not expect you to be here on Monday. So Tuesday, however, are we doing anything with 25:35
will be coming back to us for technical amendments.
On Tuesday?
Amendments will be available. Okay.
So
tomorrow.
That's a very short
time. Tomorrow's TCD.
Take 5 minutes.
Any questions?
We have fun.
Mr. Chair, you put a lot of half an hour time. We'll come tomorrow and just sit here and watch you work if you could fit a half an hour in. If it works out that way, we'd be done.
It's about a million, but it's all in from out there. So.
I don't know. We have to go through a full-blown public hearing, get into a work session, get out of the work session, and I don't want you guys just cool. I mean, I'd love to do that, Dave, but...
So the next opportunity that appears would be Tuesday or not Tuesday.
Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on what happens. 25:35.
Is that the
I love that thing. So we can stop burning tape. We will adjourn the meeting.